National Dairy Month is widely recognized in Wisconsin. That's because our state is home to nearly 7,000 dairy farms, more than any other state, according to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. But for all its success, the industry also faces challenges. Farmers struggle to find and pay workers who'll do the tough work required to keep a dairy farm running. Most of these workers, although it's estimated more than 40%, are immigrants working long hours to send money back home. We're talking about Western Wisconsin's dairy industry today on the West Side. Good morning, I'm Claire Neipert. Glad you're with us. Here with us today are Mercedes Falk, president of Puentes Bridges in Fountain City, Wisconsin. Welcome, Mercedes.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined by Mireya Sigala, founding member of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. Welcome to the West Side, Mireya.
Thank you.
Later, we'll learn more about the sheep dairy industry with sheep milk producer and a representative from Carr Valley Cheese. And finally, we'll learn about dairy industry trends and consumer behavior from a Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin expert. As always, your comments and questions are welcome. Call us at 800-228-5615 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. While reliable numbers of immigrants working in the dairy industry are hard to come by, the best known Wisconsin survey, which was taken more than a decade ago, estimated that hired immigrant workforce at more than 40% of the total. And a 2015 industry report estimates 51% of dairy workers in the U.S. are immigrants. Mercedes Falk, you've spent your weekends working on farms. What's your take on the role that immigrant workers play in the industry?
In the dairy industry, I just want to preface it with saying that I have been working with farmers and their employees for the last 5 years, since 2017. So it is new to me, and I'm still learning a lot about the dairy industry. But my experience so far is that a lot of farms, especially farms that are milking more than 200 cows, they wouldn't be able to do it without immigrant employees, and most of those employees come from Mexico and other Latin American countries, and they fulfill a need that is crucial in the industry.
Mireya Sigala, you're a member of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley, which is a volunteer nonprofit group that's existed since 2010 to assist the Latino population in the Eau Claire area. What do you think? How do immigrant workers impact our dairy industry?
I mean, it's clear that if we didn't have our immigrant workers, we wouldn't have our dairy farms here. When the raid came a couple of years ago, I was a speaker at an event at the university, and one of the farmers had attended and indicated that because he had lost all of his immigrant workers, he had to actually shut down his farm. So they have a direct and clear impact on the economic stability in this state.
Mercedes Falk, you're also president of Puentes Bridges. Let's talk about your organization for a second. It all began back in 2003 after high school Spanish teacher Sean Duval led a trip to Mexico with 15 farmers for 2 weeks. There, they met the families of workers on their farms. Where's Puentes Bridges now, almost two decades later?
Yeah, that's correct. That's exactly how we started. Sean Duval was approached by the UW Extension agent, Carl Dooley, because they really just saw a need for an improvement in communication and understanding. And so he was hoping that if they learned Spanish, that they would have a greater connection to their employees. And so Sean took all those farmers to Mexico, and even though language was a huge part of the trip, at the end of the trip, they visited the families of their employees. And that was by far and away the most impactful and important part to all the farmers. And when they got home, John Rosenau did whatever he could to make sure that it continued. So they worked together, Sean and John, and formed Puentes a few years later. And so as it has evolved throughout the years, we continue to take trips. We haven't, obviously, since January of 2020, but we work with farmers and their employees here. And we also tell stories on our website to help people see that you know, immigrants that came from Europe over a century and a half ago, and immigrants that are here from Mexico, they're really not all that different, and we have so much in common. And so we work to help people understand how much we are related and how much we depend on each other.
So Mercedes, you yourself have led a trip down to Mexico. How do farmers react to meeting their workers' families?
It is a transformative experience for anyone that goes. They are really blown away by the generosity of their employees and by how much their families are grateful for the fact that they have a steady job up here and that their employer cares enough to go all the way down to Mexico to visit employees and really see them eye to eye and have that idea of wanting to understand them on a deeper level.
Yeah, let's talk more about that understanding and communication. Mireya Sagala, what do you wish people who aren't connected to farming understood and knew about immigrant farm workers?
I think there is still a lack of education in what work they're doing and why they're in that industry. So for most people, we're not realizing outside of ourselves that in the rural areas and farming areas, we've lost that population. And so because we're losing that population, that is driving the immigrants to come and do the work. And not just that, but the family businesses of farms no longer exist. That has to be somehow compensated by other workers. And this is not work that American workers, that U.S. citizens are wanting to do. And that's why farmers have to and have been reaching out to immigrants. Because I know many farmers who have advertised and funny stories that, like, one of them had one U.S. citizen that came and applied for the position, but he wasn't applying for himself. He was actually applying for his dad, who was undocumented. So it's work that literally nobody wants to do because it's hard work. It's work that you don't get time off, and you're working all the time. And it's something that, unfortunately, it has to be done in order for us to continue to have that industry survive.
And you kind of touched on this, Mireya, but there's a perception that immigrants might be taking away jobs from people, domestic people. What do you think about that?
I mean, I've been an advocate for a long time, and so for me, that's nothing new to hear. It's interesting that we still believe that. You can go to any farm and see. I've gone to see it. I know many people have worked on farms. My partner has worked on a farm, even just in the ag industry to begin with. And you'll go and see the work, and it's not work that any of us want to do. If you're not seeing people apply to those positions, if you're not seeing U.S. citizens in those work areas, then it's clear that it's not something that we're taking away. It's a position that we're filling because we just can't get enough Americans to do that work.
Mercedes Folk, you also work as an interpreter, right, on dairy farms. What's that like? Like, how do you see as an interpreter, as the middleman between a farmer and a worker? What's the importance of that communication?
Communication is so important, and it goes beyond just the language. I see that when I do go to farms, it is necessary to have somebody that can communicate things more clearly. But the most important thing is that desire to want to understand, to not just hear the words, but understand what the employee's wants and needs are, and to realize that we do have cultural differences, and it doesn't mean that it's bad or anything like that. It just means that they're different, and we have to work to understand one another. And when employers come with that lens of truly wanting to know where their employees are coming from and not just tell them that they have, not just wanting them to only understand what they want and need, then you see those farms really thrive and strong relationships develop. But it takes time because we have to be able to want to understand the other person.
The Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which passed the House of Representatives in March, would allow immigrant farm workers to apply for legal status in the U.S. Mireya Sagala, why is it important for immigrant dairy farm workers? What does that act do for them?
Well, currently there is, for most immigrants, even if they're not working on dairy farms, there is not a legal path to residency for them to have legal status in the United States. Even if we're looking at visas such as the H-2A or H-2B, and the H-2A is for the ag, but in the agricultural industry, it's only for seasonal or temporary workers. So even in that aspect, it is not, it doesn't apply to dairy farm workers. So if we're not allowing them to be here legally, and we are continuing to do the deportation, and then what's going to end up happening is we're going to lose that workforce, and that workforce then is going to drive the prices. So in some way, it will end up affecting all of us. And so it's important for us to allow them to be here. They pay their taxes, they pay into Social Security that they are not going to get back. They're driving, they're still paying into insurance, even though they don't have a driver's license. It's important for them to be able to access things such as a driver's license, which we all take that privilege for granted. But you will actually see them stay at the farms. They're not going to leave that industry. I know people who are now legal residents here and have continued to stay on the farms because they are dedicated to that employer and they're dedicated to the work that they're mm-hmm. doing. So it's something I think that we just take for granted, that legalization will be such a turning point for farmers that I think we're going to be able to resurrect even those dying farms that we have in those rural areas.
You mentioned the H-2V and the H-2A visas. What's the current process like to get those?
So in order for them to actually even be able to apply for the H-2A, H-2B visas, and we'll just stick on the H-2A since it's about the farming industry, is that you actually have to anticipate that you're going to have a lack of domestic workers that are going to be able to be in the positions that you need for that position. And then you have to actually offer that out. So you have to like advertise, and it's not a simple step. It's not something, it's a very lengthy process. It can take up to 120 days. They average that it's about 75 days, but currently our immigration process is so behind on all of its processing that it is very, it's taking a lot longer of the time. And then they have to pay for it. They have to be certified, and then they have to be approved. And there is no like specific process that you could say we're checking off these boxes and then they get approved for it. It doesn't work like that. It is somebody at the end of that who gets to make this decision and has this unending power to be determining whether or not they feel that that farmer or that ag worker or employer has met the requirements in order for them to be able to be accessed that visa.
Let's broaden our conversation for a minute. Latino workers, especially women, face a spiking unemployment rate as a result of the pandemic. And even before COVID was in our lives, the Economic Policy Institute reports that Latino workers generally experience lower wages, income, and wealth, and they also have less access to health care and other job-related benefits. This conversation we're having about immigrant dairy farm workers is a part of a larger and complex issue. Mireya Segala, what do you think needs to happen to improve equity for Latino workers?
So we have to recognize that they are essential workers to our economy. Throughout this pandemic, they continue to work, and in so many aspects, not just in the dairy industry. And then we also have to make sure that we are not allowing farmers or any industry to exploit them. That's really important that we're the voices for them. So those of us that we can speak up, we should speak up for them, and we should give them a voice to speak out through. And then also in any point in time that we have the opportunity to speak to our legislators, to speak to our congresspeople, we should be out there advocating for them. It's great to be on shows. It's great to be at marches. But if we don't actually take physical action to help improve that, they're always going to be stagnant, and they're always going to be the ones that are exploited.
Mercedes Falk, Puentes Bridges offers some resources for Latino farm workers. Can you talk about some of those?
Yes, we work with UW Partners in Health through UW-Eau Claire, and they come in once a semester and do on-farm health checkups. And this year, they were able to get vaccines from the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic, and we were able to do a clinic that was in a central location so that farmers and their employees could come get vaccinated. And so that is one of the main resources that we help with. But it's also just education and working with hospitals and community members on the importance of providing interpretation services and helping employees know where they can access healthcare and where those resources are for them, because it's not straightforward and it's different than what they may be used to.
And Mireya Sagala, similarly, El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley also has resources for Latino people all over our area. Can you talk about some of those too?
Yeah, so we actually connect with all of our different agencies in the Chippewa Valley area. So we work with the school district. We're able to have an important role in having a dual immersion program, which is great because it also celebrates our culture within the school district. We also work with Jonah, and Jonah does a lot of great work, especially through working with the Eau Claire Police Department. And then we just provide celebrations to collaborations and really want to get out there that communication and educate people on the Latinos, because there's many of us. It's not just from Mexico. We're from Guatemala. We're from Nicaragua, from Honduras, from Uruguay, from Paraguay. We're from so many different areas, and each one of those bring their own culture and bring their uniqueness to who we are.
It's time to wrap up our segment about Latinx workers in the dairy industry. Thanks so much for joining us, Mireya.
Thank you so much for having us.
Mireya Sagala is a founding member of El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. And thank you, Mercedes Falk.
Thank you for having me.
Mercedes is president of Puentes Bridges in Fountain City, Wisconsin, and she also works as an interpreter on dairy farms. Up next, we talk about a different kind of dairy, sheep dairy. We hear from farmer John Mayer, a farmer, and cheese producer Patty Koenig. As always, we'd like to hear your questions and comments. You can call us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Claire Neipert. You're listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the West Side, where we're starting our discussion on specialty dairy like sheep, milk, and cheese. We now welcome to our show John Mayer, a sheep dairy farmer from Clear Lake in Polk County and treasurer for the Sheep Dairy Association of Wisconsin. Hello, John.
Good morning.
We also welcome Patty Koenig, senior administrator at Carr Valley Cheese and administrator for the Strum-based Sheep Dairy Association of Wisconsin. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Patty Koenig, let's start with you. For folks out there who haven't tried it, I'll ask the burning question. What does sheep milk and cheese taste like?
Oh, so delicious. It's a mild cheese, so much easier to digest. And it's great for cooking, adding to pizzas. I'm told some of the farmers actually use the sheep milk because of their properties on babies that are having hard time digesting, colicky babies, and it really helps ease that their bellies. The fat globules have more protein, so. The lack of the A1 beta casein protein make the sheep milk much easier to digest. So for that that purpose alone, the lower lactose, most people can tolerate it easier than cow milk.
What kind of cheese is sheep milk traditionally used for?
There are many artisan cheeses that we make, but traditionally there are a cheddar type cheese. We make many different artisan cheeses with it. Some are mixed with, cow and goat. But traditionally in Wisconsin, we try to differentiate ourselves from, others, European, and kind of have our own artisan brands.
The sheep dairy industry has its roots in Europe. John Mayer, how long has it existed in the United States?
It basically started in the early 90s, 1990s.
And what brought sheep dairy to farmers like you in Western Wisconsin?
Well, I got enamored with it, with the realization that it was very popular around the world, and we had so far to go here, and there was actually a lot of sheep milk cheeses consumed in the United States, and it's in my opinion, a very superior product, and there was a good potential for market, and we could develop the sheep to provide that.
The Sheep Dairy Association was just awarded a grant from Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection called the 2021 Buy Local, Buy Wisconsin Grant. Penny Koenig, what does that mean for sheep farmers in Wisconsin?
Oh, I feel, you know, the receiving of the grant will allow us to promote sheep milk products, not only to cheese, but there are other things. There's soap and lotions and things like that, that we can really get the word out there and bring that into the forefront of alternatives to other milk cheeses and other milk products and really give us a good base.
I want to get into what sheep dairy farming really looks like. So, John Mayer, what is the typical size of a sheep dairy farm?
Well, I don't know if there's a typical size, but it probably would be about that 300 ewe size is probably typical, but I do know there's varied sizes.
Wisconsin has about 2,600 individual farms that are raising sheep. John, how many of those farms do you think are raising sheep for dairy?
Well, I can only think of like 10. I wouldn't be surprised if there's 20 farms, but I'm not sure. It's a pretty small number.
You originally started in cow milk. Talk more about why you decided to switch to sheep dairy?
Well, on a personal level, I switched because I felt like there was so much potential in genetic improvement that's what drew me to it. I had been involved with the registered Holsteins, and I saw what a farmer was doing here, and it just captured me, and that was in 1994. And so I invested in my first sheep to develop dairy sheep.
And if you can think back, what were those big challenges that you faced getting started?
Well, we were struggling with converting sheep to be able to be milked because basically they were commercial sheep and not used to being handled in that way. So just getting them trained for the milking was a huge challenge. We were milking and getting less than a pound of milk and a lot of work. And so that was a challenge. But like it's been for the entirety of the time that I've been in it, marketing is a factor as well. I wanted to start milking in 1997, and it didn't work out until 1999, and I've been milking since then.
You just mentioned that you got about a pound of milk from those first sheep that you started with. Where are you at now in terms of milk production?
The average, when they're fresh and milking, they'll be giving a gallon of milk, a little over 8 pounds on the average.
And how
per day?
Yeah. How did you? Can you talk about how you got from 1 pound to 8 pounds?
Genetic selection. There were some rams brought into the country in early 1990s, and then from that, there's been a lot of development and crossed on a lot of commercial sheep, and a lot of those commercial sheep actually do milk really well, but the dairy sheep are capable of holding that lactation for a longer period of time, and then just genetic selection.
Over time in the dairy industry, we've seen technology become more a part of farmers' lives. John Mayer, I'm wondering, is that the same for you? Have you seen technology play more of a role on your farm?
To some degree, yes. We've now, for a number of years, we've been sampling the milk and testing it and recording each individual. We've done that for quite some time. But we just keep improving the milking units. And otherwise, it's kind of not too different. You know, we don't have a rotary parlor or anything like that. We don't have very expensive input.
Now, Patty Koenig, you work at Car Valley Cheese. I'm wondering, what's the relationship between, like, Car Valley Cheese, cheese producers, and small farmers like John Mayer?
Well, I feel that we have a very close relationship. We know our farms and farmers firsthand. I've been to each one, you know, and I feel that that personal relationship only is a positive effect on, you know, communicating what our needs are, what we need for volume. The volume has raised in recent years, and that's all a good thing.
That's the voice of Patty Koenig, who is a senior administrator at Car Valley Cheese and an administrator for the Sheep Dairy Association of Wisconsin, which is based in Strum. You can join our conversation today. We want to hear your comments and your questions. You can call 800-228-5615, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Patty, back to you again. You've said before that the sheep industry is on the cusp of booming. Can you talk more about that? How do you know that that's on the horizon?
I feel it's on the horizon. We have secured several nationwide chains to take on some of our sheep milk cheeses, and the awareness is there, and therefore the sales follow. And I feel it's an important part of the dairy industry, and it's only going to get bigger as demand increases.
The world's commercial dairy sheep industry is mostly concentrated in Europe and the countries near or on the Mediterranean Sea. So, Patty, what leads you to believe that sheep dairy will be successful and is successful, perhaps, here in the United States?
I feel that we have brought awareness to its extra properties, and more and more people are becoming lactose intolerant, and it's so much easier to digest where, you know, maybe in past years, consumers have not been able to handle the cow milk cheeses, and this is one way that they can still enjoy cheese, and it's, you know, packed with vitamins, minerals, and energy with the right kind of fats, and it just makes it easier all around.
Now, do you see the cow milk dairy industry and the sheep dairy industry working together?
I do. I think that we have many cheeses that are mixed milk cheeses that include the sheep milk in there, and that also makes it easier to digest, although, you know, less so. But yeah, I don't think that the cow milk is going to lower in demand. Mm.
So where do you see the industry headed? Like, what's best case scenario for you?
Best case scenario would be raising of awareness across the nation, not just Wisconsin, but across the nation. And also realizing that United States, and particularly Wisconsin, do make some fabulous sheep milk cheeses that can be competitive with European cheeses, although they've been making them longer than we have. And I think that once people realize that and get over that stigma, I think that it's really going to take off.
John Mayer, I'd like to ask the same question to you. Where would you like to see the sheep dairy industry go?
Well, I believe that there's a huge potential. What Patty's talking about is expansion into mixed cheeses. It's been a very good, successful process, and there's a large capacity for sheep milk as a drink, and for ice cream, and particularly for yogurt. There's a lot of room for that, I believe. And I think once we understand the health benefits of sheep milk, it's going to really help expand that.
You mentioned there yogurt and ice cream, and I want to hear from each of you, Patty and John, what are your favorite recipes to include sheep milk or cheese in? Patty Koenig, let's start with you.
Well, I like to use sheep milk cheeses not only just for snacking, because it makes a great addition to any charcuterie board, but pizzas, an addition to any pizza, and even in your like Italian dishes like lasagna, something that has a lot of cheese in it, because as we all know, you know, you're very full after eating that lasagna. But the sheep milk cheeses seem to really help with that. And I did want to add, we make sheep milk butter, but it has gotten so popular, the demand is higher than what we can make. So that is another area we want to expand into even more.
John Mayer, what about you? What's your favorite recipe with sheep milk or cheese?
For me, it's yogurt. We used to sell milk to a plant that had made yogurt, and it had won awards, and it was extremely good, and that was my favorite. But now we've got Carvalho making these wonderful cheeses, very focused on the quality from beginning to end. The focus on quality is so important, and we're doing very well as an industry maintaining that. And the products there are phenomenal.
Well, thank you so much. That concludes our segment on sheep dairy. Thank you for joining us, John Mayer.
Thank you.
John is a sheep farmer from Clear Lake in Polk County and treasurer for the Sheep Dairy Association of Wisconsin. And also thank you, Patty Koenig.
Thank you.
She's a senior administrator at Carvalho Cheese and administrator for the Strum-based Sheep Dairy Association of Wisconsin. We'll wrap up the hour by talking about dairy industry trends and consumer behavior with Patrick Gagan, the Executive Vice President of Industry Relations at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. You can join our conversation by calling 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Claire Neipert. This is the West Side on the Ideas Network. Welcome back to the West Side. We're celebrating June Dairy Month all across Wisconsin. We turn now to focus on current trends in America's dairyland. We welcome our final guest, Patrick Gagan. He is the Executive Vice President for Industry Relations for the group Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, formerly known as the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, a farmer-funded nonprofit dedicating to increasing sales and consumption of dairy products. Patrick Gagan, welcome.
Thank you, Claire. It's good to be here.
I want to start off our conversation by talking about consumers' perception of the dairy industry. So dairy farm families have been a part of Wisconsin for over 180 years and have earned Wisconsin the nickname America's Dairyland. So it's easy for us to think of a red barn and rolling fields because many of us see that outside our car windows. But have things changed on the farm? Patrick, do you think consumers' perception of the dairy industry has kept up with the times?
I think that the dairy industry continues to evolve. As you know, farms have gotten bigger over the years as we have fewer and fewer owners. At one time in the late 1920s, there were over 150,000 dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin. Today, we stand at about 7,000 dairy farms. And so those farms have gotten much larger over the years. And of course, so has the expertise of the individual farms. So I think that, yes, we see as we drive down the road, we see these beautiful red barns out there. And we do need to update our perception of the dairy industry. It has become a more sophisticated operation.
Yeah, let's talk about that sophistication for a second. Technology. What new tools do farmers now have access to that they didn't have access before?
Well, you know, one of the, I think, most obvious ones is anaerobic digesters. Wisconsin leads the nation in the number of anaerobic digesters with 34. This is basically the taking manure and turning it into renewable energy. So, and that is a critical factor. There's lots of these digesters around the state. Many of farms have them on farm. There are also some community digesters that are available down here in the Madison area. There are two digesters act as community digesters. That's something that the dairy industry is very keen to continue to develop. The industry has an objective that by 2050 we will be a net zero impact on the environment.
And how has that development of technology changed the way that farmers do their job?
Well, clearly there are fewer people on the farms, and it's largely technology driven. Years and years ago, there was always a small house on many farms, and that's where the hired man and his family lived. And we don't have those so much anymore. So technology in the form of larger equipment that can cover larger fields has supplanted the need for those hired help. We still have lots of people working on farms. The dairy industry creates about 160,000 jobs in the state of Wisconsin, generates a $45.6 billion economic impact for the state, making it one of the most important industries that we have.
And there's a lot of discussion about small farms and large farms and industrial farms, and we'll touch on that later. But I'm wondering, what role do you think that technology and innovation play in keeping small and mid-sized farms afloat?
One of the things that we're seeing increasingly in Wisconsin and around the country in the dairy industry is the deployment of robots. And that is replacing the need for employees, as you discussed in one of your earlier segments this morning. Finding labor on farms is one of the biggest challenges our farmers have. So that is so the use of robots in Wisconsin is something that we're seeing increasingly.
Yeah, let's talk about labor. According to the U.S. Bureau of Statistics, the annual mean wage of an agricultural worker in Wisconsin is about $32,000 a year, or $15.50 an hour. And farmers are struggling to find workers, especially if they can't pay well, but at the same time, the farmers are going bankrupt. Patrick Gagan, do you see a way out of this sort of catch-22?
You know, I think if I did, I would be a wealthy man. This is it's a complicated topic. Margins are extremely thin for dairy farmers. In fact, several years since 2014, farms have operated at a loss. So paying high wages is a real challenge for farms. And, you know, the way that our organization, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, our charge is to build demand for Wisconsin milk. The way we do that is by increasing consumption of the products that come from that milk. And so since we were established in 1983, we've seen cheese consumption grow from 17.5 pounds per person to 37 pounds per person. Butter is at a 50-year consumption high. We've all seen the growth of yogurt. That's up over 300% over the last 30 years. So that's what we try to do. We also provide funding to the Center for Dairy Research at UW-Madison, which is one of the crown jewels of the Wisconsin dairy industry. They help our cheesemakers and dairy processors develop new products and solve problems that they may be having with the cheese, for example. And so that is the way that we try to help farms build demand for their milk. And we've been relatively successful at it over the last 35 years.
Around this time last year, I was hearing stories of farmers having to dump gallons of milk because supply was high, but demand for that milk was low. Patrick Gagan, how did the pandemic impact milk sales?
Well, it was, as you know, within about a two-week time period in late March and early April of 2020, we saw a 70% decline in food service sales. And almost half of the cheese produced in Wisconsin is sold into the food service segment. So it was a difficult time for the dairy industry. And the industry had to switch gears rapidly. One of the ways that we did that is we began working very closely with food banks in the state of Wisconsin. We did an inventory of all the food banks in Wisconsin. We were surprised to discover that there are over 200 food banks in our state. We identified the largest networks and then began to work with those large networks to place dairy products with them. Fortunately, the dairy products were purchased from the processors. That allowed the processors to pay farmers so that they could continue to farm. Certainly not at levels of profitability that we'd like to see, but it allowed the industry to continue to move the milk so that when we came out on the other side, and we're still in that process, as you know, that we would have as whole of a dairy industry as we possibly could. We've been really fortunate in Wisconsin. The dairy industry came together and worked together in remarkable ways, and I'm extremely proud to be part of the dairy industry and to have seen what this industry will do to help each other. I think we all have a lot to be proud of with the dairy industry in Wisconsin.
Yeah, where you kind of touched on this earlier, but where do you think sales are headed now?
Well, I'm excited. You know, as I mentioned, we continue to see growth in the per capita consumption of dairy products. We've all heard the stories of the decline in fluid milk consumption, and that's certainly been the case. But we've more than made up for that with cheese consumption. So I would think that, especially considering the commitment that the industry in Wisconsin has made to producing high quality products, especially on the specialty cheese side. Over 70% of our cheesemakers in this state are producing specialty cheeses. Wisconsin has a 49% share of specialty cheese sales in the United States, which is a remarkable accomplishment. When you look at high-end items, let's say like Mercedes-Benz and BMW and Audi, if you add their market shares together, it still doesn't equal 49% that we have in specialty cheese. So we're really excited about what we're seeing in specialty cheese. We're also seeing significant opportunities on the export side. The rest of the world is beginning to recognize that the United States can compete with anyone in the world in terms of cheese quality. And so we are making a lot of headway, even in Europe. But we're focused right now in the Middle East and Asia markets and making good progress. So I'm excited about the opportunities that are out there. We're seeing a lot of innovation in yogurt. And as your previous guest said, there's all kinds of new butters that are being developed. So it's an exciting time in the dairy industry. A lot of new product innovation.
Let's touch briefly now on the diversity in farm sizes in Wisconsin. There's been an increase in farms with 1,000 or more cows in the last few years, where the average farm in this area 30 years ago might have had 40 to 80 cows. Why do you think diversity in farm size and type is important?
Well, as I think we discussed in our call yesterday, every farm in Wisconsin is important, not only to the entire state's economy, but to those local communities and small towns that are spread out across the state. The average farm in Wisconsin spends over 90% of its income within a 50-mile radius of its location. So clearly, the success of dairy farming in Wisconsin is critical for the success of Wisconsin generally.
Dairy breakfasts are a really visceral, hands-on connection that farmers make with their community. What was lost by not being able to have those in June 2020?
Well, we still had a lot of breakfasts that went on last year. They were just a little bit different. I mean, a lot of the breakfasts were drive-throughs. So we had those going. But this year, it looks like we'll have over 70 dairy breakfasts during the month of June. This tomorrow and Sunday are going to be big days for dairy breakfasts. I would suggest that everybody who's interested in finding a dairy breakfast to attend to just simply Google Wisconsin Dairy Breakfast, and it'll take you to our website. And we have a listing of all the dairy breakfasts, but there are several that are occurring tomorrow in every section of the state of Wisconsin. So it's a great way to understand what's going on modern dairy farms, and understand and appreciate the lengths to which dairy farmers go to make sure that they are operating ethically, treating their cows well, treating the land well, and continuing a tradition that Wisconsin is known for around the globe.
I'll add here that if you're interested in attending a dairy breakfast, the Pierce County Dairy Breakfast is happening tomorrow. It goes from 7 a.m. to noon at the Markridge Farm in Elmwood. Cost of admission is $7, and I hear there are Ellsworth cheese curds involved. Patrick, to wrap up with you, my final question, what do you think the future has in store for Wisconsin's dairy farms?
You know, I think, Clara, that when we look at the popularity of dairy, some 93% of households purchase dairy products, whether it's cheese or yogurt, butter, fluid milk. There's only one other category in the grocery store that has a higher household penetration, and that's toilet paper at 97%. I don't know what the 3% who don't buy toilet paper are doing, but I really don't want to think about it. But we have a very bright future in the dairy industry in Wisconsin. And I would just advocate to all of your listeners out there to, if you want to support the dairy industry, if you want to support local farmers, make sure that when you're shopping for dairy products in your local store, that you see that it carries the proudly Wisconsin cheese or Wisconsin dairy logo on it, because that's your assurance that the product was produced in Wisconsin using Wisconsin milk. And that's a great way to support farmers.
We could spend probably another hour talking about all of the facets of the dairy industry, but I'm getting hungry for some cheese curds. Thank you today to our many guests. Thank you, Patrick Gagan. Thank you so much for joining us. He's the executive director of, the executive vice president of industry relations at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. And earlier, we heard from Mireya Segala from El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley and Mercedes Falk from Puentes Bridges. John Mayer from the Sheep Dairy Association and Mayfield Family Farms. And we also heard from Patty Koenig from Carr Valley Cheese and the Sheep Dairy Association. Rick Weyer helped produce today's program. Kate Spranger is our on-air producer. She also manages publicity. Coming up next week on the West Side, it's another legislative update. This time we'll hear from Senators Jeff Smith and Kathy Bernier about what the upcoming state budget means for Western Wisconsin and more. Join us next Friday at 10 on this station. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Clara Neipert, and this is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.